Hello and welcome back. My name is Avi Heller, and together we're learning Masechet Megillah. This series of recordings is a joint project of the Orthodox Union's Department of Synagogue Services, OU Torah, and the Daf HaShavua Foundation. We are in the middle of 15b, Daf Tet Vav Amud Bet. Right in the middle of the daf, at the very end, the last word on the last of the middle wide lines, right before we get to the really wide lines. And we are continuing our darshaning of the Megillah. We've been taking most of the verses of the Megillah and giving rabbinic interpretations to them. We are already in chapter Hey, and we are at the moment when Esther is appearing before King Ahasuerus after fasting for 3 days, and she's going to ask Ahasuerus and Haman to come to a party that she's made for them that day. As we learned yesterday, this is actually happening either on Erev Pesach or on the first day of Pesach. But this is when the story of Purim happens. So it says, "Vata'amod v'chatzar bet ha'melech ha'pnimit," and Esther stood in the courtyard of the house of the king, the inner courtyard. Amar Rabbi Levi. Rabbi Levi says, "Kevan shehigia lebet ha'tzlamim," when Esther arrived at the house of statues, at the house of idols, "Nistalka himena shechina," then the divine presence departed from her. So as we mentioned earlier, when it said that Esther had donned, pasuk comes from Tehillim Chaf Bet. And Tehillim Chaf Bet is Lam Naseach Alayel HaShachar. We've mentioned it a couple of times in this tractate already, that the entire Mizmor is darshaned related to Esther and to Mordechai. And Esther herself is called the Ayelet HaShachar. This is the second verse. Pasuk Bet says, Eli Eli Lama Azavtani. It says, she says, Shema Atadan al Shoge Kemezi Val Ones Keratzon. Maybe you're judging me, my inadvertent sins, as if they are sins that were done on purpose, and my sins that were done against my will, out of my control, as sins that I did with my will. So probably it's this last one that she's talking about, meaning we had mentioned in our last recording that every other time she had ever gone to Ahasuerus, it was only because he had summoned her and she had no choice. And this was the first time she was ever approaching Ahasuerus of her own free will. And because of that, it was the first time she would, so to speak, be committing a form of adultery with him by appearing before him willfully. So that's Ones Keratzon. There, though, she clearly judged herself as if this was Ratzon. And here, she's afraid that Hashem is going to consider it Ratzon, but that is the way that she herself had thought of it. So that's a question that we have to deal with. But she brings another possibility. Oshema, or perhaps, Al Shekarativ Kelev. Maybe Hashem is upset because she called him a dog. So even though Ahasuerus is kind of a dog, nonetheless, perhaps she should have had proper respect for the king or for the kingship and not called him that. She says, Shenemar, as it says, Hatsila mecherev nafshi miad kelev yechidati. Save me from the sword that is at my soul, from the dog that is threatening me. It's interesting, the Marsha points out that Hatzila Mecherev Nafshi has the Rashi Tevot, the first letter of each of those words is Haman. So he says it's hidden in the verse, the idea of Haman. So then she said, but if that's true that I called him a dog, Chazra V'karato Aryeh, I then went and called him a lion in the next verse. And a lion is a more honorable animal to compare a king to. Shenamar Hoshienu Mipi Aryeh. Fine, that's a kind of a cryptic argument to make. But in any case, so when she got to the king's palace, suddenly the spirit of prophecy that she had departed from her. Nonetheless, when Ahasuerus saw Esther standing there, it says Nasa'achein beinav, she found favor in his eyes, and he extended to her the Sharvit HaZahav, the golden scepter, that he had, and anyone who didn't have the golden scepter extended to them was put to death. Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan said, Shlosha malachei hasharei nizdamnu la be'ota sha'ah. There were three ministering angels that were summoned to her at that moment. So she was surrounded by three angels that were helping her. Echad, this kind of reminds us of Avraham, who had three angels that came to visit him. Echad shehigbia et savara, one of them lifted up her neck. She was weak after 3 days of fasting. This is how some interpret it. And so it sort of straightened up her posture so that she didn't look as weak. And the other one was the one that had a cord of kindness for her. We had said before that Esther had a certain charisma and charm that everyone who saw her liked her. So I don't know if this angel was with her all the time or just at this time. Maybe she needed extra help because she was so weak from fasting. But this angel was the one who attached a cord of kindness to her, that everyone who saw her, this chut shel chesed, whatever it is exactly, was a sort of radiance of kindness. Ve'echad, and the third angel, shematach et hasharvit, lengthened the scepter. So apparently Achashverosh was supposed to extend the scepter, and then the person was supposed to walk up to it and touch it, which is what it says in the Psukim. But according to the idea that Esther was very weak, she could not approach the Sharvit. It was a miracle that the scepter itself grew longer, elongated, so that it went all the way up to Esther, and she could touch it without walking forward. Now we have an interesting conversation. V'kama, how far did he extend the scepter? Amar Rabbi Yirmiyah, shtei amot haya. The scepter itself was 2 cubits long. V'ha'emido al shtei mesrei. And it lengthened out until it was 12 cubits long. So in other words, it was extended by 10 cubits. V'amrila al shesh esrei. Some say it went out to 16 cubits, which means it was extended by 14. V'amrila al esrim v'arba. And some people say the scepter got to be 24 amos long. B'matnita tana, in the Mishnah it teaches, al shishim, that it got to 60 amot long, which means it was a long way from where Achashverosh was sitting to Esther. The Maharsha says that each of these numbers comes from counting the number of words in different sections in the Megillah, depending on how much of this chapter you count. But we won't deal with that now. Here we have an interesting comment, though, and it says that just as this angel extended the golden scepter to Esther, v'chenata motze ba'amata shel bat paro. Here we find the same thing with the ama of bat paro. It happens to be that when I'm recording this, the parsha of the week is Shemot, and I think it's worth taking just a quick moment to give my interpretation of how this works. This might be familiar to you. It's something that is taught to children in school, that when Moshe's mother put him in a basket in the Nile, eventually when he was discovered by Bat Paro, so it says there, Vatera atateva betochasuf, she saw his basket in the water or among the reeds, Vatishlachet amata vatikachaha, and she sent out her ama and she took it. Now, usually there are two interpretations that are given here. Either the miraculous interpretation, which is that her arm, like she was Plastic Woman, extended out so that she could reach with her arm all the way to the baby, to the basket, and bring it in. Or the other interpretation, the pshat interpretation, is that amata refers to her maidservant, and she sent her maidservant into the water to get it. I'll suggest another interpretation based on our Gemara, which is that there was a kind of a stick called an ama. It was a measure of a cubit. So you had a stick that was the measure of a cubit, and if you had to measure something, you would use this ama cubit stick to measure it. So we see there's a story in the Gemara that when a proselyte came to Shammai and said, teach me the whole Torah while I stand on one foot, he drove him out of his office with an amat habinyan, a builder's cubit, which was a builder's cubit. It was a kind of a stick in which you could measure what a cubit was. So perhaps when Bat Paro was standing on the side of the Nile, she had a stick in her hand, which was an ama long, and miraculously that stick was extended out longer, just the way Achashverosh's scepter was longer, so that she could reach Moshe's basket and bring it in. Now, I don't know if that changes anything exactly in the interpretation, but it is a different way of reading the verse. Okay. V'cheinata motzei b'shinei rishaim. We find the same idea related to the teeth of the wicked, that they get elongated. Dichtiv, as it is written, this is also in Tehillim, Shinei rishaim shibarta. You broke the teeth of the wicked. Now, it could be that we can understand that in a simple way, that you just broke the teeth of the wicked. But the Amar Reish Lakish, al tikri shibarta, don't read it as you broke the teeth of the wicked, ela sherivavta, rather that you elongated the teeth of the wicked. Rashi, based on this, explains that what they may be referring to is the story of Og Melech HaBashan. In Masechet Brachot, it tells a story that Og picked up the mountain and he was going to drop it on the heads of the Jewish people before they could accept the Torah, and that Hashem commanded some small animals, some ants, to go into the mountain, and they tunneled all around his hand so that the mountain had a hole in the middle and it fell onto his head. And then his teeth were elongated, so the mountain was like kind of around his neck and he wanted to pull it off of his neck, but since his teeth elongated like a rabbit's teeth, the mountain got stuck on them and he was unable to lift the mountain off of his head. So that is the story, that it's a kind of a crazy story of Og and his teeth becoming longer. To understand that story and what it means, we would have to put a footnote. We can put a pin in it and come back to it at some point to try to understand the deeper meaning behind that story. The Maharsha mentions that perhaps it's related to the idea that the last teaching, that Ahasuerus' scepter was elongated up to 60 amod, is based on this pasuk from Vishinei Rishayim Shibarta. Sorry, it's not the Maharsha, it's Rashi. That instead of saying Shein Resha Shibarta, the teeth of wickedness you broke, it says Shine Rishaim. So if you take the Yud from Shine and the Im from after Russia, you have a gematria of 60, which could be where he gets the 60 amot that Ahasuerus' scepter was elongated. Finally, Rabba Bar Ofran Amar, this is the second time we've had Rabba Bar Ofran in our Masechta, he says, Mishum Rabbi Lazar, in the name of Rabbi Lazar, Sheshama Me Rabbo, who heard from his teacher, Verabo Me Rabbo, and his teacher heard from his teacher, Mataim, that the scepter actually grew until it was 200 amot in length. And that is the end of that discussion about how long Ahasuerus' scepter was elongated. Vayomer Laha Melech, the next verse says, and the king said to Esther Hamalka, Ma Bakashateich, what is your request, Esther? Why have you come to see me? Ahasuerus was impressed that this is the first time that Esther ever came to see him. And he says, I'll give you anything you want. Ad chatzi ha-malchut v'te'as. Request of me up to half the kingdom, and it shall be done. So the rabbis interpret this, chatzi ha-malchut, half the kingdom, v'lo kol ha-malchut, but not the whole kingdom. Right? He's only offering up to a half share. He didn't want her to have a majority share. But another way of reading it is, v'lo davar shechotzeitz la-malchut. Not any matter that divides the kingdom. So chotzeitz is related to the word chatzi. Chatzi means half, and chotzeitz is something that cuts in half. So it says not something that would divide the kingdom in half. Umaynihu, what is the thing that is divides the kingdom in half, or is right in the middle of the kingdom? Binyan Beit HaMikdash, the building of the Beit HaMikdash. In other words, the way the rabbis are looking at this teaching is that Ahasuerus says, ask anything you want of me, Esther, but don't ask me to build a Beit HaMikdash. Now, of course, this would be a funny thing for him to say because he doesn't know she's Jewish and she doesn't know that she has skin in the game. But the point that I think they're trying to make is that that was one thing that Ahasuerus was not willing to do. And in fact, during all of Ahasuerus's tenure, the Beit HaMikdash was not rebuilt, even though this, according to the rabbinic view of history, this is after the Cyrus Proclamation. No progress is made on building the Beit HaMikdash until Ahasuerus's son. So it was something that he was not interested in doing. So Esther says to him in the next verse, Yavo ha-melech v'haman el ha-mishteh. Let the king and Haman come to the party that I'll make for them today. Tanu Rabbanan, our rabbis taught, that's the abbreviation there in the middle of that line, Tuf Resh, means Tanu Rabbanan, our rabbis taught. Ma ra'ata Esther shezimna et Haman. They ask a very good question. What did Esther see that she wanted to invite Haman to this party? Why did she have to invite Haman? Couldn't she just have invited Ahasuerus? Or alternatively, couldn't she have invited lots of other people to this party, all sorts of other nobles and aristocrats, and then she could have humiliated Haman in front of all of them? Or why did she need a party? Why couldn't she have done it right there in the throne room? So all of these are potential questions here, but it's a fundamental question. Why did Haman get invited to this party? And the Gemara is going to give 12 answers to this question. I'm not 100% sure that each of these 12 answers completely answers the question, and that none of them overlap with each other a little bit. So we're going to go through them pretty briefly just to make sure that we understand what the words are and what they say, and then as far as a deeper analysis of how each one of them works and which is the best answer, we'll leave that to another time. So here's the first one. Rabbi Elazar says, Pachim tamnalo, she was setting traps for him. Shenemar, as it says, Yehi Shulchanam Lifnehem Lepach, let their table be before them for a trap. So Belazar says, Esther, whatever she was doing, she was looking for a way to trip Haman up. Some interpret this that she wanted him to feel comfortable, and when a person is comfortable, they give away their secrets, or they're likely to be more vulnerable. Or maybe she just wanted to be able to watch him and see what his weaknesses were, but she was setting a trap for him. That's the first one. Here's the second one. Rabbi Yeshua Omer, Mi Beit Aviha Lamda. Rabbi Yeshua said, from her father's house she learned. Now she obviously didn't learn it from her father because she never had one. But from, so Rashi says, from the children who repeated the lessons that they learned from her father, she heard. Shenemar, as it says, Im Ra'av Sonacha, if your enemy is hungry, Ha'achileu Lechem, feed him bread, which is a kind of a way of saying keep your enemies, keep your friends close and keep your enemies closer. Keep them close until you can see the way to destroy them. Rabbi Meir Omer, Rabbi Meir says, this is the third answer, Kidei shelo yitol etza v'imrod, so that Haman would not take some kind of advice and rebel against the king. That maybe while she was keeping the king occupied, Haman would be able to go spin an intrigue to get rid of the king. And of course, that would have been his fondest desire, would have been to be the king himself. Rabbi Huda Omer, Rabbi Huda says, the fourth answer, Kidei shelo yakiruba shehi yehudit, so no one would know that she was Jewish. I'm not sure how this accomplishes this goal at all. I do not understand this answer, but it was somehow was part of maintaining the secrecy of her identity. I don't know how this accomplished it. Rabbi Nechemia Omer, Rabbi Nechemia says, and this is the fifth answer, Kidei shelo yomru Yisrael, achot yesh lanu bebeit hamelech. So the Jewish people should not say, oh, we have an ally. Achot means someone who's on our side in the house of the king. V'yasichu datan min harachamim. And they would remove their thoughts from mercy. In other words, Esther wanted the Jewish people to feel motivated to continue to daven and to pray and to hope for Hashem saving them. And if Esther was meeting with the king all by herself, they might think, oh, Esther's got it. We don't have to worry about it. But when it was Esther with Haman and Ahasuerus and Haman, they still felt like there was enough of a danger that they had to be involved. Rabbi Yossi Omer, this is the sixth answer, that he should be around her at all times. In other words, she wanted to keep an eye on Haman all the time to see what he was up to. Rabbi Shimon ben Menasseh Omer, and this is the seventh answer, Ulai yargish hamakom v'yaselanu nes. She thought to herself, maybe Hashem will have, you know, feel for me, and he'll make a miracle for me. In other words, let me stay close to Haman, and maybe Hashem will give me a chance to defeat him. Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha Omer, and this is the eighth answer, Azbir lo panim, I will flatter Haman, kidei sheyehareg hu vihi, so that both he and she will be killed. Now Rashi's interpretation of this is that Ahasuerus might think that Esther and Haman were in cahoots. He was a paranoid king. He might think that the fact that Esther wanted a special meeting with just him and Haman meant that Esther and Haman were plotting against him, and maybe he would kill both of them. So in other words, this was a sort of a queen sacrifice, but she was hoping maybe she could take herself down with Haman and at least get rid of him. Rabban Gamliel Omer, and this is the ninth answer, Melech Hafach Fachan Haya. Ahasuerus was a impulsive king. He couldn't think for himself, so he constantly changed his viewpoints from one to the other, depending on who the last person he talked to was. So she wanted to make sure that if she was there with Haman, if he said something to the king suddenly like, oh, let's go kill all the Jews now, she could at least be part of that conversation and maybe she could walk it back. Amar Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Gamliel says, Adayin srichin anu lemodai. We, despite all the answers we've given so far, which are nine, we still need the answer of Rabbi Elazar Hamodai. Ditanya, Rabbi Elazar Hamodai Omer, and this is the tenth answer, Kina'ato b'melech, Kina'ato b'sarim. That the whole thing is about Ahasuerus being a jealous and paranoid king. So she invited Haman to the party so that the king should be put his eye on Haman and say, why did Esther invite Haman? What's he up to? And then the king would look at Haman, and also so all the other aristocrats and nobles in the palace would be more jealous of him than they were before. Now, it's hard to believe they would be even more jealous. He already had everyone bowing down to him and was raised up to be second in command. But here, it increased their jealousy of him, and so they might not, you know, want to be on his side. It gave potential allies to the Jews against him. Rabba Amar, Rabba says, and this is the 11th answer, Lifnei Shever Geon. He quotes a verse from Mishlei, which is a famous verse that we usually interpret as pride goes before the fall. Lifnei Shever, before the break, Geon, comes arrogance or pride. So, in other words, Esther was building up Haman so he wouldn't see it coming when she smacked him down. Abai v'Rava d'Amri Tarvaihu. Abai and Rava together give an answer, which is the 11th answer, which is based on a verse in Yirmiyahu. B'chumam ashitet mishtehem. And this verse has to do with Belshazzar, that when Belshazzar came back from his victory in battle, he had a feast at which Daniel was at, and that was the night in which he was killed. So Esther was hoping maybe also, you know, it seems like people die at feasts. Vashti died at a feast, Belshazzar died at a feast. Maybe if I invite Haman and Ahasuerus to a feast, Hashem will also take care of them. So that is, I guess that's 11 or is that 12 answers? Oh, I think that last one was the 12th answer, actually. So in total, we had 12 answers for why Esther invited Haman to the feast. Maybe none of them are completely satisfying, but we have a postscript, which is very interesting. Ashkechei Rabba Bar Avuha Le'Eliyahu. Rabba Bar Avuha happened to come across Eliyahu, and by this we mean Elijah the prophet, who sometimes appeared to Tanaim and Amoraim, and they had conversations with him. So he found Eliyahu, and he wanted to ask him this question. Amar Leh said to him, Kiman Chazi Esther v'Avde Hachi. Like who was Esther really thinking when she did what she did? Like, we have 12 answers as to what Esther might have been thinking. Eliyahu, can you tell me what Esther was really thinking? Amar Leh, he said, Kikulhu Tanai v'Kakulhu Amorai. Like all of these Tanaim and all of these Amoraim. In other words, he said all 12 answers are what Esther had in mind. She was working as many possible angles as she could. So, I don't know. But they're all very interesting. Each one is worthy of its study in its own right. As we'll see in these pages that are full of Agarata, there's lots of interesting possibilities to follow. We don't have time to investigate all of them, but there are tremendous opportunities once we learn them to try and make further connections and have further study on them. Okay, we are now 2, 4, 6, 8, 9 lines from the bottom, and we're continuing on. After the first party, Ahasuerus goes home, and he sees Haman sitting in the gate, and it makes him very angry, and he goes home to his family. And when he gets home, it says, Vayisaper lahem Haman et kavod ashro v'rov banav. Haman regales his whole family. He must have been a very tiresome windbag. He regales his family with how honorable and wealthy he is and how many children he has. So the Gemara stops there and asks the question, V'kama rov banav? What does it mean with all of his children? After all, we see later, because Haman's 10 sons are enumerated when they are all hung on the gallows in the war, we would assume that Haman had 10 sons, and those were the ones that were hung. Amar Rav, however, Rav says, Lamed, actually Haman had 30 sons. Asara Metu, 10 of them died, those are the ones that are mentioned that are hung on the gallows. Asara Metu, this 10 of them died, I guess, in the battle. The Asara Nitlu, and 10 of them were hung, those are the ones that are mentioned in the Megillah. The Asara Mechazrin ala Patachin, and 10 of them were left alive, but they became beggars and they had to go begging from door to door. The Rabbanan Amri, and the rabbis say, Otan Shemechazrin ala Patachin, Shivim Havya. I agree with you that he had 10 sons that were killed and 10 that were hung, but he had 70 sons that had to go from door to door as beggars. So that means a total of 90 sons. Dichtiv, as is written, there's a verse in Shmuel that says, Sveim balechem niskaru. Those who are satisfied or sated with bread become drunk on it. So he says, Al tikri sveim, don't read satisfied, ela shivim, but 70. V'rami bar Abba Amar, Rami bar Abba says, Kulan matayim u'shmonahavu, that Haman actually had 208 sons. Now this is quite a lot of sons, especially unless he had many, many wives and was extremely fertile. But this is based on a gematria. Shenemar v'rov banav. It says that the multitude of his sons. So the gematria of rov, resh is 200, vav is 6, and bet is 2. So that makes 208, exactly. So that's 208 sons, Rov Banav. But the Gemara has a question. Verov gematria matan va'ar besar havi. But really, it should be 214 because the word is verov. You have to add the va in the verov, and you have to add another 6 to 208, which makes 214. Amrav Nachman bar Yitzchak verov k'tiv. Okay, so we'll take out the vav in the middle. Instead of reading it verov with a vav, you can just put a cholam there. And so then, even with the verov, you still have only 208. Are we supposed to learn from how many sons Haman had and all the different numbers? I do not know, but for further study. Okay, 2, 4, 6 lines up from the bottom. Now we come to the center point of the Megillah, the beginning of chapter 6. Balayla hahu, on that night, nadidash nat hamelech, the sleep of the king was disturbed. We have three opinions about this. Amar Rabbi Tanchum says, 5 lines up from the bottom, nadidash nat malko shel olam. It was not the sleep of King Achashverosh that was disturbed, but it was the king of the world. In other words, Hashem's sleep was disturbed. Now, according to the opinion that this was happening on Seder night, so this was a kind of night when Hashem was, so to speak, more alert. This was the night that the Jewish people were taken out of Mitzrayim. It was the night of Makat Bechorot, when the firstborn were killed. So this was like a special night or a time at night when Hashem was particularly active in the middle of the night. And so this year also, the sleep of Hashem was destroyed, so to speak, whatever that means. V'Rabbanan Amri, the rabbis say, Nadidu Elyonim, Nadidu Tachtonim. The heavens were agitated. The angels and all of the heavenly hosts were agitated. And that agitation was causing an agitation in the lower realms, in the earthly realms as well. Rava Amar, Rava gives the Pshat explanation. He says, Shnat HaMelech Achashverosh Mamesh. No, it was really Achashverosh's sleep that was disturbed. Why was Achashverosh's sleep disturbed? Nafla le milta bedate. He got an earworm in his mind. A matter was bugging him that he couldn't get out of his head. Amar, he said to himself, "My dekaman dizminte Esther lehaman. What is this thing that's going on that Esther invited me and Haman to this party? Like, what's going on?" And this partially is exactly what Esther wanted to do, was to disturb the king and make him, you know, his thoughts start spinning around. So he said to himself, Dilma, maybe Eitza Kashakli Iluya Dahu Gavra Lemiktale. Maybe someone has an Eitza, a strategy that they came up with for a certain person to kill me. Maybe someone is plotting to assassinate me. And of course, this is something he had to think about all the time, partially because there were people that were plotting to assassinate him. Hadar Amar, but then he said, Ihachi. If it's the case that someone is plotting to assassinate me, lo hava gavra derachim li, isn't there anybody that loves me? Dahava mudali, and then they would tell me about the plot. Like, don't I have supporters? So if there are some people that are plotting to assassinate me, I should have some people to come to tell me, oh, there are people that are plotting to assassinate you. So Hadar Amar, but then his thoughts were still spinning. He says, Dilma, maybe Ika Inish. The Avad Betivuta, maybe there's a certain person, the Avad Betivuta, that did a kindness to me, did something good for me, Velo Paratiha, and I'd never repaid him. So he did like me and he did nice things for me, but then since I never repaid him, he said, oh, well, the guy's an ingrate, why am I going to go do him any favors now? I won't tell him that there's a plot to assassinate him. Mishum hachi, and for this reason, mimni inshi velo megalili, and therefore they are preventing, mishmimnu inshi, these people are preventing themselves, velo megalili, and they're not revealing to me the plot. So in his head, all of these thoughts are going around and around. Miyad, immediately, he says, vayomer, now we're quoting from the Megillah, vayomer lahaviyad zefer zichronot divrei yamin, bring me the book of records, the chronicles of the king, and I'll read in them and see if perhaps there is some friend that I've neglected who I can look up, and maybe they can tell me what's going on, because something's going on and I don't know what it is. So they brought him the Chronicles of the King, Vayu Nikraim, and they were read before Lifnei HaMelech, before the king. So it's kind of a weird word. It doesn't say, and the servants of the king read it to him. It says, and they were read in a passive voice. Milameh, so the rabbis say this comes to teach, shenikraim me'elehen, that the chronicles read themselves, like kind of like a magic book, like the book itself read out loud from what was written in it. Vayimatzei chatuv, and it was found written. So the Gemara says it shouldn't have said written. Katuv means like it's being written right now. Katav mi baile should have said it had already been written. So it sounds like something was being written right now, not like something had been written a long time ago. Milame, this comes to teach, say the rabbis, and now we finished Daf Tet Vav, and we're at the very top of Tet Zayin. We're just going to do two more lines. She Shimshi Mochik v'Gavriel Kotev. That Ahasuerus had a chief scribe named Shimshi. Some people say he was one of Haman's sons. Others say that he was the, Rashi says this, that he had also been the chief scribe for Belshazzar, and that he was a notorious anti-Semite, and he spent a lot of time trying to make sure that in the mainstream media, nothing positive was said about the Jews. So he wanted to make sure that nothing good was said about Mordechai or about the Jews. So whenever something was written in the Chronicles that was positive about Mordechai, Shimshi would be mochik, he would erase it. But as he was erasing it, Gavriel, the angel Gabriel, came down and would rewrite it. So as much as Shimshi tried to get rid of it, there it was written, and then they were able to, and then the book read to Ahasuerus about what Mordechai had done to save his life from Bigtan and Teresh. So as a postscript to this story, it says, so Gabriel made sure that that Mordechai's deeds were taken note of. As a postscript, it says, Amar Rabbi Asi said, Darash Rabbi Shila Ishkvar Timrata. We have a drasha from Rabbi Shila from Timrat. Uma katav shelamata shelizchutan shel Yisrael eno nimchak. Just as something that is written down below on earth, shelizchutan shel Yisrael, that is for the benefit of Israel, eino nimchak, Hashem did not allow it to be erased. Instead, he made Gavriel come and make sure that it was rewritten. Kitav shelamala, if there's something written in the heavens, lo kol shekein, meaning anything written in the heavenly books that is for the benefit of the Jewish people, for sure Hashem would never erase it, and we can count on Hashem taking count of it when he decides, on Yom Kippur, what's going to happen with the Jews. Okay, we're going to finish here, three lines from the top of Daf Tet Zayin. Have a wonderful day.